of Arizona. Actually, it's north of Wickiup, Arizona. I just PayPal'd you $20. I'll send more when I reload PayPal. Bob Kincaid, oh, wow, here's a motto or a slogan. Bob Kincaid, even one day a week, is better than most liberal radio programs Monday through Friday. Ray says, I can't type it worth a damn on this iPhone, so I'll end. Thank you. Thank you, Ray. That means a lot. It really does. It really, really does. But there's stuff to do tonight, isn't there? Yeah, there is. Fortunately for me, I saved all of my tabs before the shutdown. That's what all that... See, we are battery backupped out the gazoo, but we'd have to have something like something on the order of car battery backups to keep this thing up and running through that long of a power outage. We have a generator, and it does work, but there's some work involved with getting it going, and, well, means, hey, boy, fire up the generator, and then we got to do some rewiring and stuff like that. So I was just, once I knew that it was a guy on the pole, I figured we would probably be back, and that was a bonus. No, but work to do. Yes, indeed, there is work to do, stories to go over. And a lot of them from a wide variety of sources. Being as how it is prayer meeting Wednesday, however, I think we'll kind of stay in that prayer meeting Wednesday vein, if that's okay. And just sort of take a peep in at the right-wing religion industry and just say, just see what they're up to. Let's start with, again, from our friends over at Right Wing Watch. Let's start with Linda Harvey. She did a Remembering 9/11 program. By the way, I got an email from our dear friend of days gone by, Peter Godbold. Photographs from a series called Retrievers. There were some 100 rescue dogs that were brought to the site of the Twin Towers in the aftermath of their collapse on September 11th, 2001. And I have to admit, I'm a little bit like our buddy Dr. John. He's a Mark Twain fan. You know I'm a Mark Twain fan. And it was Mark Twain who said that if heaven were granted on merit and not faith, our dogs would get in and we would be left outside. I was reminded of that today when Peter sent me the photographs from this memorial in its own right called Retrievers. I have to admit, I get a little choked up over this thing. As I said, over 100 dogs were brought to search for bodies in the rubble of the collapse of the World Trade Center. And dogs, as you know, are not as long-lived as humans, just as we are not as long-lived as elephants and sea turtles. Dogs are not as long-lived. And of the 100 dogs that responded on September the 11th, 2001, I think this note from Peter pointed out the fact that there are less than 15 of those noble animals still alive. And they are worth remembering in their own right. Again, the retrospective is called Retrievers. I suspect you'll be able to find the photos if you go looking for them. The dogs that remain of those 12 dogs that remain of the 100 search and rescue animals that responded are all retired now, living out their lives in what one hopes is peace and pleasant circumstances. The piece again is called Retrievers, and you will see muzzles that are gray with age, but eyes that are alight with love and compassion. I did. I got all misty-eyed. I love dogs. Love cats. But these dogs spoke to me. So maybe go and look it up and think about them. And I got to thinking about those in this context primarily because of what I'm about to offer you. A woman by the name of Linda Harvey who is a hate-filled thing. She has a radio show. And this is how she remembered. That was the name of the program. Remembering 9/11. Dear God.
How in the world can the left be aligned with these folks? Well, there's a real simple answer, I think, in that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. They all hate the actual Judeo-Christian heritage and those who uphold it. They hate the West. And, of course, we are not perfect. We can look around and see some of our own problems. But they hate the ideology. They hate the freedom. It's a spiritual thing. They hate Jesus Christ. And so this is why you have the homosexual and pro-abortion feminists remaining silent or actually being apologists for radical Islam. Hello. They would be the first people that, you know, in an Islamic state would come under some level of oppression. Why wouldn't they be afraid of these people? No, because they all hate Jesus Christ and his followers.
You got that? Us liberals, us progressives, us gay folks and us folks who don't hate the gay folks and all the lesbians out there, they hate Jesus Christ. Yeah, really. This is how we remember 9/11 in the sick, twisted religion industry world of Linda Harvey. Now, at the same time, she has in the past, as Right Wing Watch notes, she has praised radical Islamists for being fanatically anti-gay. And yet, she says the liberals hate Jeebus. I'm having a hard time squaring this one up. Honest to God, I am. Because, well, consider. These are the people who love Jesus, so they say. These are the people who love Jesus, who sat in an auditorium 2 weeks running in separate locations and cheered death. In one hand, cheered 234 people put to death, at least one of them being a complete innocent in Texas. And then 2 nights ago, cheered the idea of a man being left to die in misery on some presumable church floor somewhere, because that's the way freedom and liberty is. By the way, those people who love Jesus, well, one of those people who loves Jesus is Rick Bro-Fro-Mix Frothy Mixture Santorum. Now, this is a guy who's been running around trying to do his own little take on the Jesus parable gig. You know, a napkin's not a paper towel, a beer is not a bartender, a Buick is not a sixth grader. All kinds of insane crap. Yeah, this is a guy who was so adores fetuses that when his wife had a dead one, they took it home to torment their own little children with it. Yeah, I know. Generally, to even think about something like that, I have to put on a Halloween mask or a hockey mask, or, you know. But this is a follower of Jesus who did that. So much for suffer the little children, huh? Suffer real good. Have some nightmares. Some real bed-wetting ones, why don't you, little sandworms? So I've got a little audio here for you, courtesy of the folks at Crooks and Liars, David over there. And you'll be forgiven if you just want to run screaming into the night after this 5 minutes and 56 seconds. Yeah, 5 minutes and 56 seconds. I'm sorry. This is not just killing time. It's not like I don't have stuff lined up for the program. This is going to take a little bit. Sorry.
Question is what we're going to do about Social Security. I said this last night. You know, you had Romney and Perry back and forth sort of chirping at each other. By the way, neither providing a solution. Neither saying what they would do. Oh, well, we think about it. Well, for almost 20 years, I've been talking about Social Security. Back in 1994, as I said last night, I was running for the Senate against an incumbent Democrat in a state with almost a million more registered Democrats than Republicans, in a race run by James Carville and Paul Begala against me, and in a state, Pennsylvania, that has the second largest percentage of seniors of any state in the country. I always say the first, by the way, is Florida, but I always say Social Security is more important in Pennsylvania to our seniors than it is to the seniors in Florida. Why? Because all my rich seniors moved to Florida. And therefore, they're not as worried about their Social Security check as the folks that had to stay behind because they couldn't move. So this is a big deal in a state. And by the way, I went out and said, we need to do something about Social Security. I said it to a group of young people at LaSalle University in Philadelphia. I said, one of the things we need to do is do what Ronald Reagan did. And that is understand that people are living longer, much longer. Does anybody in this room believe that someone who's 62 years old is too old to work in America today? Anybody? Social Security was established for people who were too old to work, and therefore they needed the support of the federal government. That was the reason Social Security was put in place.
I got to back up on this. I'm sorry. I just did.
And by the way, I went out and said, we need to do something about Social Security. I said it to a group of young people at LaSalle University in Philadelphia. I said, one of the things we need to do is do what Ronald Reagan did. And that is...
go senile?
Understand that people are living longer, much longer.
I'm going to do everything in my power not to begin screaming. I would like for my little voice to make it through not only this program, but be able to do, you know, thorn in the side Thursday and Friday on the front porch, too. I really could. I could shout myself hoarse over this. We need to do what Ronald Reagan did. People are living longer. What in God's name does that mean? Ronald Reagan had the best subsidized, socialized health care that the people of the United States could afford him. He got his sorry, greasy-headed life saved from an assassin's bullet thanks to your taxpayer-funded health care. He drew his social... He was drawing Social Security when he entered the Oval Office! Is Rick Santorum saying that Ronald Reagan shouldn't have drawn Social Security? Ronald Reagan wasn't just on the federal government dole health care. He was on Medicare when he entered the Oval Office. But this is one of those sort of Malthusian arguments about people living longer. And it's disturbing as hell.
Does anybody in this room believe that someone who's 62 years old is too old to work in America today?
I do. If you're 62 years old in America, that means that you have probably been working at a minimum of 30 to 35 to maybe 40, 45 years. Now, we know I'm terrible at math on the fly, but let's just do some math here. I started working when I was 15 years old. Many of you probably started working earlier. And truthfully speaking, so did I. As long as the grass was growing in my neighborhood, once I hit about, 12 years old, I hung my gas can on the handle of my lawnmower after school and on weekends, and went up and down the street knocking on doors, asking people if they needed their lawns mowed. Now, I was not raised destitute. I was, in fact, raised very much middle class. But there was a blush of pride on my father's and my mother's faces when I took that on myself. Another 12-year-old, a couple of doors down the street, well, he'd had a paper route for, I think he started his paper route when he was 10. There was all kinds of work. So, yeah, when I turn 62, I will have been working for 50 years. And I am in no wise extraordinary in that regard. You have been too. So a 50-year work life is still not enough for an evil, privileged, right-wing Jesus lover like Rick Santorum. It is not enough. The only answer for Rick Santorum is for us to die. You'll see what I mean.
Anybody? Social Security was established for people who were too old to work, and therefore they needed the support of the federal government. That was the reason Social Security was put in place. We put in place this program to take care of the elderly. I don't know of anyone who's 62 years old who sees himself as elderly. Okay? I'm nine years away from 62. I don't see my...
And you've never worked an honest day in your life, you punk bastard. Never, not one. Standing there in your little pink Oxford cloth button-down shirt. By God, your hands would probably melt off the ends of your arms if you got them dirty, Rick. You know what? I told you I wasn't worth a damn with math on the fly. I don't get to retire at 62. Neither does any of the rest of my generation. We don't get to retire at 65. We work till we're 67 before we get to mop the sweat off of our brow and say, enough. We get to work till we're 67 because people who were older than us decided that we could, by God, work till we were 67 a couple of decades back. And to our eternal shame and discredit, my generation was, I don't know, snorting coke off a hooker's butt or something. Or getting liquored up in a bar. Or raising a family. Or otherwise distracted. Maybe just by working for a damn living. Yeah, I was behind a microphone at CNN. Every day, day in and day out, happily working. At the time, I was the youngest guy ever to anchor an international radio newscast, which is still kind of cool. That record was shortly broken by the guy that came behind me, and I trained him. And so I guess at 23, I thought, well, what the hell? Now, I know, at 23, I didn't say what the hell. I was pissed at 23. It was 1986, wasn't it, when they did this? 24, 25, doesn't matter. I've been a news junkie all my life, and I didn't like it. Because I wasn't getting a say-so. Because there wasn't anyone from my generation that was in on that decision for us to work an extra 2 years. And you see, the same kind of divisiveness is going on now. That's why this argument is being made by this godforsaken fascist freak. This is classic separate pieceism. This is classic divide and conquerism. Hey, y'all out there, you're already getting it. Don't worry, we ain't gonna touch yours. Let's screw them. Long as you're getting yours, it don't matter, do it? No! Screw them young people! They gonna probably live to be 112. What do they need to be a quitting work at 62 for? You know what? It would be nice, and because we all have our dreams. It would be nice to be able to knock off the wage slavery, turn around and take that, wow, that great big Social Security check that we make that you make the long walk to the mailbox for every 30 days. And being socially secure, be able to go off and do something, I don't know, fulfill a dream. Go to school for something. Or maybe go and follow another love that you didn't get to do because you were busy feeding a family or responding to the crisis of everyday living. Maybe volunteer at something while you still, because, you know, sexagenarians and septuagenarians and octogenarians do still have a lot to offer. Among other things, they have things to offer a younger generation that the younger generation can't otherwise get. And I'm not talking about, now listen, Sonny, in my day, no. I'm talking about the transmission of that transgenerational wisdom that we talk about so much. But you know what? If you keep those sexagenarians struggling and scrabbling and grubbing along, they damn sure won't have time to pass any wisdom along to the 20-somethings or the 30-somethings, even the ones who want to hear it and want to learn it. And in the absence of that wisdom, people like Rick Santorum, this filthy merchant of hate, they make it a little more likely that they're going to succeed. But we haven't gotten where we're going with this goober yet.
So, it's elderly? And that's because, now back in 1936, he probably did. And that made sense. Why? Because life expectancy in 1936 was 61. It's now 80. Well, it's 78 for men, it's 82 for women. So
and it's falling!
So, you have a situation where things have changed. And for our young people, it'll even be longer because we keep gaining about a month every few years. We gain in life expectancy. And so the idea that we're going to keep the Social Security program locked in on a 1937 actuarial chart makes no sense at all. Why? Because we have to pay for this. Average person in America who turns 65. You were born in 1946, you turned 65 this year. Do you know what your life expectancy at 65 is? 85. So you have folks living at least 20 years. Anybody know what?
And by God, they need to be working. The nerve of them thinking that they can just lay off and put their feet up and relax having worked for 40 or 50 years. The nerve of them! Get out there! Tote that barge! Lift that bale! You damn bunch of slackers!
What percentage of seniors take Social Security at 62 as opposed to wait till 65 or now 66? 70% take it at 62. Okay? Ronald Reagan saw this problem and said, look, we have to do the common sense thing. We have to phase the retirement age back. What did he do? 25 years from 1983, he started to phase it back. And we did. And that's where we are right now. We're in the middle of a phase up. To age 60.
Oh, it's a phase up. What is that? Phaser set on geriatric Rick Santorum? He seems to have this stylized, idealized notion of what it means to be old in America. You manage to survive to 65, and you might, and you maybe, well, you still do right now, get Medicare. That gap between 62 and 65 is a scary place, now 66, as he notes. That hateful old monster, Reagan, already drawing Medicare, already drawing 65, drawing Social Security since he was 65, saying, I've got... Well, Mommy, I've got mine. Screw everybody else. And now people like Rick Santorum are gunning for the everybody else part.
67, which will be normal retirement age. But we need to continue to do that. Not radically, but look at where the revenues are coming in and where the expenses are, and we need to adjust, whether it's everything from cost of living increase for high-income seniors is one thing.
Yeah, you know what? I finally figured it out. It just dawned on me. These evil bastards actually have sat around trying to thinking about how to screw us out of this stuff because it belongs to us already. And if you just follow the illogical progression of where this ghoul is going, this follower of the Prince of Peace, well, you don't have to eliminate Social Security. You just raise the retirement age above the expected average lifespan. Sure, you can have full Social Security. You know what? We'll give you $3,000 a month Social Security. You know what? We'll do that as soon as you turn 95. No, they didn't kill Social Security. They just fixed it. Okay, 90. Well, maybe 87. And yet, these goons talk about wanting people to go to work. The more folk, you know, there was a recognition in the 62 retirement age. It wasn't just trying to give people an opt-in at a little less money. That was a money-saving measure. It had nothing to do with people's well-being. Opting in at 62 saved money. But it also got people out of the workforce and allowed younger people to enter so that you didn't have an unemployment glut of young people. Which at the time I was one, at the time they did this, I was one of. Oh, they're slick. They're plenty slick.
We can look at retirement ages for, and again, you'll still be able to retire at 62 or take Social Security, just get a light, slightly smaller benefit. Why? Because we can't afford the benefit structure we have because people are living too long. And we have a baby boom generation.
What? Stop.
Not radically.
Wait a minute. Now, before we go back over this, because it just flies by me, it'll fly by you. Before we go back over this, remember, this is a guy who gets into a weepy little funk over all the aborted fetuses. I feel sorry for his wife, making her bring home her stillborn child and show it to her living children. But they're one of those Christian households where she has to submit to him and do whatever he says, whatever pops into his psychopathic little mind. Listen to this. These are the words of a pro-lifer.
But look at where the revenues are coming in and where the expenses are, and we need to adjust, whether it's everything from cost of living increase for high-income seniors is one thing. We can look at retirement ages for, and again, you'll still be able to retire at 62 or take Social Security and just get a light, slightly smaller benefit. Why? Because we can't afford the benefit structure we have because people are living too long.
Ow! People are living too long. We want to get them out of the womb, out into the world, and then hustle them into the grave before they can collect that Social Security because they're living too long. You got that? You're living too long. You heart beater, you air breather, you consumer of precious finite resources that could better be consumed by young fetuses. You're living too long. But remember, according to Linda Harvey, it's us liberals, us progressives, that all, that's a quote, all hate Jesus Christ.
Well, security, you just get a light, slightly smaller benefit. Why? Because we can't afford the benefit structure we have because people are living too long.
We can't afford the benefit structure we have because the, what happened? Yeah, the payroll tax cut. 3.1% for employers, 3.1% for employees. That's 6.2% of the withholdings were taken away. Before that, Social Security was, as they say, sound as the pound till 2037, full benefits as it currently exists. After 2037, if absolutely nothing was done, then benefits would begin to decrease. But instead of talking about fully funding Social Security, these freaks have completely, and it's been successful, don't kid yourself, it has been successful. They've got the President of the United States talking about reforming Social Security. They've got so-called mainstream or moderate Democrats talking about the need to reform Social Security. If they were really interested in reforming Social Security and making Social Security something that could be healthy and fully funded to the nth generation, well, the answer's easy. Lift the cap. Pay Social Security taxes on every penny. Don't stop at $106,000. Get Mr. and Mrs. Howells the rest of that. Tap into the rest of that as well. $50 million a year Rush Limbaugh makes. And he makes it purveying nothing but hate. Now, of that $50 million a year, what is, let's see, 500 times... 0.06. Yeah, that's about $3 million a year. I think Rush can afford it. I think Glenn Beck can afford that, too. I think NFL and NBA and Major League Baseball players can afford that. I think George Soros can afford that. I think George Will can afford that. I think Barack Obama can afford that. And at the risk of getting another email about how I'm too mean to poor Barack Obama, I don't want to hear anybody who makes more than $106,000 a year ever again, although we will, say a damned word about the need to cut benefits or check benefits or reduce benefits, as long as they are not paying Social Security tax on every blessed penny they earn. Don't talk to those of us who don't make $106,000 a year about reducing benefits until they are paying their entire fair share. Is that so hard to comprehend? I don't think so. There's a reason we don't talk that way, however, or not we, but they. It's a very fancy word. It's called avarice. And in their holy book, it is listed among the seven deadly sins. It is sometimes called greed. Yeah. Rick Santorum says we're living too long. David in Tennessee noting, living too long, huh? Well, our current health care delivery system will get that living too long problem turned around if the Repiglicans have their way. Yeah, Alan Grayson wasn't kidding. The Repiglican health care plan is to die quickly while they cheer. It is not that hard to comprehend. Die quickly. And Rick Santorum has confirmed it, because he says, you are living too long. You know, I don't buy into the invisible friend juvenile delinquent with the beard in the sky thing, but I would never dare to tell anyone that a life that is already far too short can ever be determined to be too long. I think about those dogs, the search and rescue dogs that I mentioned. from September 11th. We had a yellow lab once. Loved her dearly. Had her from a puppy on up. Oh, what a dog she was. Her name was Miranda. Miranda means miraculous to behold. And she was. When the babies were little and just beginning to toddle, she would walk sideways behind them and flop on the floor if they began to go over backwards so they'd land on her and not hurt themselves. Yellow lab. And the outside of the lifespan of a yellow lab is about 15 years. And she lived every one of them. We never put her down. We let her die as naturally as she had lived and cared for her to the very end. She died in Agnes's arms. And I would never have said of that beloved animal that she lived too long. And that's a dog. And I, agnostic at best, maintaining some sort of private spiritualism that I can't enunciate and would not dare to foist upon you. I, who don't worship their bloodthirsty death cult, I would never say to another human being, you have lived too long. But that follower of Christ said it, didn't shrink from it, and was proud of it. People live too long. Any questions? Any questions?
And we have a baby boom generation. I went out and argued for changing the Social Security system in 1994. At that point in time, we had about 250,000 people a year turning 65. Why? Because in 1994, the people who were retiring were people who were born during the Great Depression. And during the war, I knew that there was a 15-year window of people born in the 30s and early 40s for us to be able to change the system. Why? Because very few people were retiring. Why? Because very few people were born. It's not 200. This year, there aren't 250,000 people turning 65. 1.5 million people are turning 65 this year. 1.3 million next year, and so on and so on. We're going to go off a cliff. And the ranks of seniors is going to...
We're going to go off a cliff. A generation of people making it to 65 years old is, in the mind of this mainstream Republican, going off a cliff. People living to appreciate their age, not working themselves into complete broken down hopelessness, is a tragedy for Rick Santorum. And a tragedy for the rest of the Republican Party, too. He didn't call anybody down for cheering about that man dying unattended, alone, grim, and miserable in that hypothetical question Monday evening. Oh, hell no! He had it coming. Maybe the new motto of the Republican Party should come from Clint Eastwood's classic, modern classic, The Unforgiven. Deserving's got nothing to do with it. No, because in the Republican world, deserving's got everything to do with it. And if you work for a living, if you have scratched and scrabbled and successfully managed to make it into your sixth, actually the 60s is your seventh generation, into your seventh generation, your seventh decade, you deserve to die. Because you're not a fit engine for some captain of industry or promoter of finance or what, magician of consumption. You're no longer useful to them, and you could just as well die. But sooner or later, this talk is going to get around to that company that hires Wilford Brimley. And that company that sells scooter chairs. You know, the one that the lady sits in out there at the edge of the Grand Canyon. In the commercial. They're going to start writing letters. The hell you talking about, boy? Don't you know we make a mint off of this? Hard to stomach. Mighty hard to stomach. But that's the world that they want to live in. Where we stack the dead like cordwood. And they sing them home to Jesus. If that. This is what's coming in 2012. That freak whose audio I have been playing, and it's real easy to kind of ignore this, but that freak is considered to be a mainstream, absolutely upright, normal member of the Republican Party and candidate for the presidency of the United States of America. There's nothing, according to the for-profit media, there is absolutely nothing abnormal about him. So there you go. So we'll take a little break and come back. And hopefully go to your phone calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. I've kind of over-filibobstered this evening, and I apologize for that. But when I heard that Rick Santorum clip earlier today, suffice to say that I have calmed down a little bit. You know? Yeah. So light them up, and we'll see what you've got to say. You're listening to America's listener-supported, emphasis on that phrase, listener-supported, liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
Thank you. don't talk much more. She sits and stares through the back door screen. And all the news just repeats itself like some forgotten dream that we've both seen. Someday I'll go and call up Rudy. We work together at the factory. What could I say if he asked what's new? Nothing. What's with you? Nothing much to do. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in that. So if you're walking down the street sometime, spot some hollow ancient ash, please don't just pass them by and stare as if you didn't care. Say hello in that.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius, we got your soap right here.
And don't worry about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
5 minutes before the hour, and we'll get hour three started a little early. Heck, who knows? We may actually need the extra time, depending on how the conversation turns out. Darn fine comment from our buddy William. Off the cliff after you, Senator! Don't sing me off. I want a New Orleans brass band send-off. And for those of you who don't know, the Bump Out song is one that's always meant a lot to me. It's a John Prine classic. It's called Hello in There. These bastards get much more grip on us. If they get much more traction, I have a feeling we'll be playing that a hell of a lot more, let alone living it a hell of a lot more. So, enough already. Let us go forthwith, and gosh, I hope you're still there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Susan from the Malloy Chat. How are you?
Well, hey, how are you?
Good talking to you.
Oh, it's so hey, nice. I'm so glad you called.
I really like that hello in there. Did you know that Bette Midler did a really nice version of that, too? I really like it.
She's covered some other John Prine stuff. I think they must be friends or something.
I'm not a big fan of hers, but she did a good job on that one. I was calling about the Social Security. You know, they're doing it all backwards. You know, talking about expanding the age upwards, especially on the Medicare, is just going to cost us more in the end as a country. And the Republicans are just deliberately reversing all the information and facts on it. It's like, I feel like I'm in, you know, Superman's bizarro world with everything all upside down. If we lowered the age of Medicare for everyone and everybody put into it and we upped the FICA so that everybody that earned a paycheck had to pay out of it no matter how much they earned, I think that we'd be solvent forever. And our hospital costs would go down, but then the insurance companies would suffer, and so would a lot of wealthy investors, and that's what it's all about.
And it seems, Susan, it seems like it's always that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. These people, I don't even recognize some of the people in my country anymore. These people, our country is being invaded politically by a handful of its citizens from within that are total sociopaths that have no they're just totally callous. They have no empathy. They're like automatons. They have no empathy for their fellow man at all. It's the purest libertarian ideal when it comes to their laws, their, you know, their tax breaks, their everything. But when it comes to our personal liberties, they want to control them all.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, with
calling
them libertarians is a mistake because they aren't really. They're just total fascists. And the Social Security is a really good case in point. Before there was Social Security, 70% of all retired people were below the poverty level. And now it's only around 10%, which is not good, but it's better than it was. And whenever they raise the age on that, which they're talking about doing it yet again, I think they'd like to get it to 70. When they do that, suppose you're 60 and you're out of a job because of a bad economy. Who's going to hire you? Nobody.
Well, look at what we've seen with the 99ers. The ads that went out, that have been going out for a year now, whenever a job opening does come out in the classifieds or whatever, it'll say, do not apply for this job if you don't already have one.
Right, that's another big problem, too. And there was talk of trying to get a program going that would reward people for hiring people that have been unemployed for a long period of time in that it would, you know, pay for part of their cost of training or part of the salary, but you know that's going to go, you know where that's going to go, right in the dumper, because the Republicans are never going to go for that one. But there's ways that could be fixed, but these people don't want to fix anything. They want to see the country go down the tubes financially because it's to their advantage.
Well, and beyond it, beyond the financial aspect of it being to their advantage, Susan, let's also bear in mind that they want the country to go in that direction because they just, and I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush here, and I'm not trying to be over the top. These people really do despise the governmental structure of the United States of America as it is presently constituted, even though it is presently constituted vastly in their favor. It is not, the playing field is not vertical yet, and they want it plumb vertical. When they get it completely broken, they will eventually go in. I'm no prophet or anything, but
if you're a student of human nature, that's logical that they would be that way. Because look at somebody who is like one of these I don't know if you, how you call it, a gambleholic or somebody that has a really gambling disorder. When they win, they gamble even more, because they want it all. They want it all. And these people are like that. I mean, the more you give them, the more voracious the appetite becomes. The larger the company gets from absorbing other companies, the more companies it wants to absorb. So what you end up with is eventually one corporation. and of course, you know, what's going to happen, and it's already starting to happen with these huge multinational corporations, is they're starting to fight each other. It's, you know, it's the old pit bull thing.
Yes.
You went
to the gambling disorder, the route. Before we go any further, Susan, I want to call another thing to your attention. Do you remember the study that was done back when cocaine began to be a real problem back in the 80s? They took lab rats and they gave them cocaine. And after a while, the lab rats became so addicted that they would just sit there and eat cocaine. And, you know, I mean, nobody was, you know, cutting lines for them or anything. They would just sit, the lab rats would sit there and eat cocaine until they died. They would consume
right.
until they keeled over dead.
That's,
and I
that's
think
a good analogy.
That
that's
is what
analogy.
We're dealing with these people. They are, okay, let's go for another analogy. They're locusts. The myth of the ant and the grasshopper. You know, the grasshopper just eats and eats and eats until it dies. It never sets anything back for the future like the ant does. These are locusts. These are grasshoppers. They are totally, completely dedicated to absolute predation on our culture, on our society, and on human flesh, frankly.
Well, and a lot of the problems with these people, and a lot of this was revealed when Brad Friedman got those tapes from the latest Koch brothers seminar, that it was pretty obvious just listening to them, which was hard to do, actually. They were brutal. And it was pretty obvious listening to them that they don't view national borders at all. They are thinking globally, that the United States is just another tool to them that they can use right now to beat other countries over the head and the citizens of the United States over the head. Eventually, what they would like to do is see the United States in a third world status with the extremely wealthy, no middle class, and a bunch of worker ants. And you can see that that's one of the things with the moving the companies overseas. Another whole problem is the entire agribusiness. Everybody's saying, what's the farm aid, we need farm aid. And the farm aid is because the family farmer is being shoved off the farm just the way Walmart shoved the mom and pop out of small town America. They went and got all these programs for farmers put into the tax code, and then they took the programs. The multinational companies, farm companies, like using all the Monsanto chemicals, are all getting these huge, huge tax subsidies. Meanwhile, it's all tied in with the immigration program. They've stopped immigration as much as they can and got the undocumented workers all kicked out of the country so that there's nobody to pick the crops. This year it's happening in Georgia a lot, maybe in West Virginia where you are. It's happening in all across the South where all the undocumented people are not there to pick the crops. The crops are going bad, partly because of, you know, the weather, but also because there's nobody to pick them. And the big farmers can hang on. But the small farmers, the non-factory farms, they're going under. The bank gets the farm. You have a fire sale, and multinationals come in and take it, and there you go. And that's what's happening to all of our farmland. What used to be the belly of this country that fed us all is disappearing and becoming owned by multinational corporations that are not American corporations.
It's not a pretty picture, is it?
No.
It's frightening.
I wake up and I don't even know my country anymore. In fact, I don't even know this planet. This is happening not just here, Bob. It's really scary.
that's one of those things, Susan. You know, I get the calls from people saying, you know, Well, if so-and-so, you know, I'm going to move, or I'm going to go to Canada, or I'm going to go, you know. And I don't blame
Harbor,
it.
Harborville?
Yeah, I don't blame any.
The biggest pollution project in the world going right just above me in Alberta.
And I don't blame people for saying stuff like that, but where are you going to go? I mean,
I travel a lot, and there's no place. I mean, I have traveled a lot. I've traveled my whole life. I've been on several continents. I've taken students all over the world to Canada, to Africa and all over. And the world is turning into one giant third world country. And wherever you go in the Americas, like I spent 5 years in Central America, wherever you go, the influence of the multinational corporations that are based in the U.S. and have U.S. company names is everywhere. And people see those corporations, and they think that's the United States. So hatred for the United States is partly based in what these corporations do. Coca-Cola goes into third world countries and sells their products so cheap, and they also sell all the bottled water and all these other pops. And they get people hooked on them, and it's cheaper than any of the food in the store. They put Coca-Cola in the baby bottle, and those little babies are drinking this sugar water, this crap. They have no idea this is bad for them. I mean, it's just awful. I mean, you don't want to move out of here unless you have someplace better to go. And Europe is turning into the same situation, you know? I mean...
Well, you know, it's like David in Tennessee just noted by email. He said, for the Koch brothers, there are no countries, and certainly not this one. There are only markets. And ultimately, that points to the real problem, Susan, and that is this. What we're talking about, even though we haven't really, really, really said it yet, we are talking about what capitalism, run amok, has done to the whole planet.
Yes, it has. And what's really exacerbated it all, of course, is peak oil. And the machine, this machine, this huge multinational machine, runs on fuel. And that fuel is becoming more scarce. And so they're each trying to grab as much as they can before it gets really bad. And it's ridiculous. It is just like the locusts. It's like the locusts are just descending and raping everything. And when they get finished, there's nothing left. And what it's going to take, I don't think elections can cure this. I'm sorry, I just don't. It's going to take movements and on a global scale. And that's why I'm so interested in this October 2011.org movement, because it's not just American, it's multinational. There's actions going on globally, and they're coordinating them. So
I think that's a start, Susan, and I don't want to just be a cold hamburger on this. But
no, I don't think it's going to solve it.
There's got to be another component mixed into this, and that component was most readily visible at the Keystone XL pipeline protests. It has to be a matter of coming and staying and not leaving.
Now, let's see what they do. They're gonna go to Freedom Square on October 6th, and they're not planning on leaving. They're planning on staying there forever. And there's also an action going on, I think, on the 17th of September, where they're gonna take over Wall Street. What are they gonna do? Are they gonna camp there? I don't know. You know, and that is supposed to be coordinated with global actions. So global actions seem to work better than American ones. Americans haven't really gotten it yet. They haven't gotten fed up. And the problem is a lot of Americans are tools of these multinationals. Their information that they're getting is all wrong.
I don't know that Americans haven't gotten fed up yet, Susan. I think there's a lot of fed up Americans. If nothing else, the poor, benighted, the living in darkness teabaggers are fed up. They know something's wrong, but they're too godforsaken dumb to actually learn what it is. They've got an easy...
And why are they dumb? They're dumb because of a poor educational system. And
yes.
Dumb because they're being fed propaganda. They're being spoon-fed it. And a lot of that spoon-feeding started in the churches. The churches have been political for the last 20 years, and they have been bringing up people to fight politically it's really amazing when you look into that.
And so, but the other thing, Susan, is that the American people, in large part, even still, at least those of the American people who still have a job and so forth,
mm-hmm.
They are still very happily wearing their velvet-lined shackles. And what I mean by that is nobody is going to go anywhere and protest and sit down and not leave. Nobody's going to go and camp out. Because you know what? It's great to do
only
that.
Only over the weekend because I got to get back to work on Monday, y'all.
Bingo, because there's an insurance premium and there's a mortgage payment and there's a car payment. And look,
there's people sitting there that lost their house. I don't want to be like them. Yeah, I know what you mean. There's also another thing. There's a fear factor now that is very unpleasant that's been instilled in people for the last 10 years, even the liberals. And I saw a reflection of that today. Just happened to turn on the local television network station, not network, the local affiliate, to see the weather and stuff. And they, this is in Seattle, and they were going out to the airport to talk to passengers because they had heard about this rollback on the pat-downs for children. I'm sure you've heard about
mm-hmm.
it. That Homeland Security has issued that they're going to stop groping the kids quite so much as they were groping them, and they went out to see what people's reaction was. So I'm watching this. I'm doing my exercises in the morning, and I'm watching this. I'm thinking, oh well, everybody's going to be real happy about this. No, absolutely not. The reaction was totally negative. People were saying, oh, I don't think that's a good idea. That's dangerous. That's flirting with why they could use a terrorism bomb. They could put it on somebody's kid. Why not checking those kids is a bad thing. And I'm like, my God, you're practically being body cavity searched. Every time you get on a plane, you have no shoes, you're x-rayed, you got so many x-rays that the dentist is afraid to give you one too. And now, you want your kids all groped all the time? I can't, because of fear. Because they believe that somebody is just waiting to put bombs on their airplane. People are so petrified when they fly now that they are reporting the person sitting next to them if they look at them cross-eyed.
Well, and you know that story
is actually dangerous now.
You know that
you happen to be black.
You know that story, right? I mean, it was just sort of breaking today. Did we learn any lessons out of September 11th, 2001? Well, this story, Susan says, hell no.
No, we haven't learned
because
it's, we did everything wrong afterwards.
It's the story. Everything. It's the story of. A woman, a housewife from Ohio, even.
Right.
She's half Arabic and half Jewish.
Half Jewish. She's dark. She's very pretty. And she was sitting between two East Indians on the airplane. None of them knew each other. And the men got up to, one of them was having a little, traveler's diarrhea problem, went into the bathroom, was there way too long, and the other man had to go too, and you can't eat that American food when you're from India.
Yeah, your body rebels against the preservatives, right?
Right through you. And in the U.S. anymore, you can't really drink the water. So she did not go into the restroom, and yet all three of them were arrested because somebody on that plane pointed out that these people were in the restroom way too long and they must be up to something because they're dark.
Well, not only were they arrested, you know that NORAD scrambled a pair of F-16 jets to tail that flight from Denver.
No, I did not know that. I knew that it was met with cost. I did. Oh, my God.
Just take a minute.
How often is this happening?
Take a minute, Susan, and just think. Think of all the people on that airliner. And there is a pair of U.S. Air Force F-16s behind them with missiles locked.
Right, and those
ready to
the
blow them out of the sky.
Crapless that they're going to get shot down. And the pilot, imagine what the pilot of the airline was thinking. And of course, he's the one who turned them in. And now he's thinking, I'm going to get shot down. And it's happening more than once. The story that that Mike read not too long ago about, I think the man's name is Vince Gilbert. He's a musician, a black man, tall, nice looking, dressed well, but casually, and he was on a flight, and one of his hobbies is reading. He's very into model airplanes, and he builds them, and he, old ones, World War II, and he was reading a book on World War II airplanes on the plane, and was turned in for that. Nice, looking at maps of the plane. We gotta arrest him. He's probably gonna try to blow it up or something.
This flight from Denver to Detroit. Yeah, this flight from Denver to Detroit. The plane was met by 10 SWAT team members. You know, the black helmets, the black uniforms, the name tags blacked out. You know, the guns, the boots, you know, the works. Because somebody was scared of brown people.
I lived in Alaska for a while near a cannery, a salmon cannery. And it just would operate in the summer. And there were often undocumented workers that were brought up from Mexico to work in this cannery. And one day the Black Hawk police ICE helicopters came and pretty much cordoned off the whole neighborhood. And I'm telling you, it was really scary. Even though I assumed what was going on, it was scary. I didn't know whether they were going to open fire or what. Nobody did. It was, you know, some of the things that we're doing as a country now are just not attractive, not at all. It's not the country I grew up in, and I just don't know where this is all going to end up. But I don't think it's going to end up in the ballot box. I mean, I don't see any cure for this. These people have so much money, and now that they can buy elections, they can spend unlimited amount of money. They own the Supreme Court. Where are we going to go with this, Bob?
That's the part where it gets a little bit dicey, Susan, because, you know, I take this, what I hope is a sort of calm attitude. I apparently get crap for it. You know, me, calm. Yeah, I'm in the dictionary beside calm. No. But maybe it's because, you know, we really are not accustomed to this. We really have lived in a bubble in the United States for quite a long time. This is what it feels like to live in empire.
Yeah.
We cloaked ourselves in the flag and in all of that stuff they teach you in first grade and then later on in like eighth grade civics, and you get to feel pretty good about stuff, and you know, maybe you know your mayor or whatever, and you don't really look at the big picture. But the
right.
big picture
and when,
is right
when
in
I
front of
there,
our
I'm
faces now.
You, I'm a lot older than you. In fact, I'm really over the hill. And when I was a kid and we were traveling in foreign countries, as a child, you know, I felt really proud to be an American. I mean, people admired us and they treated us well. And I think that created in me, it instilled in me an attitude about my country that probably was very distorted, you know. And now, man, I tell people I'm Canadian when I go someplace.
How can you? Well, I don't blame you. I remember the guy who would wear the shirt in Arabic and French and Chinese that said, back during the Bush years, that said, "I apologize for the fact that my president is an idiot."
Yeah. Well, I spent most of the Bush administration outside the United States, and I can remember telling a couple of people that I was Canadian.
But
you're an American? You know, like, you know.
Oh, no, yeah, I'm from Toronto.
Yeah, eh? Vancouver, eh?
And see, but, you know, we were talking about airplanes and stuff. It's not just airplanes. It's did you see the Mall of America story? I can't remember if I mentioned
this
on air or not.
Yes, I did.
You can't go to the Mall of America A guy was detained, and the FBI was brought in simply because he was walking through the Mall of America with a video cam rolling. Another guy who's a musician was simply sitting on a bench making notes, and the Mall of, you know, the Mall of America security decided that he must have been a terrorist who was plotting which stores he was going to plant all the bombs in.
Well, the private security is untrained and crazy. A lot of them are cop wannabes, and they, you know, the security, they just pay. And a lot of people, what I found out, the thing that shocked me that I found out from that article that was about that, was that if you get questioned by one of these guards in one of these malls, they have to turn it into to Homeland Security, and now your name is on a list, and God help you, next time you want to fly, you're going to, you know, you're going to be in a little room getting a strip search.
And you ask, what can we do to change this? And I am as guilty as anybody because of the nature of this program. Maybe if there's any hope of changing this, Susan, it is the fact that we've got to stop looking out at things like presidential and Senate races. Sure, they're important, but if people really want to change things, then it's even given the fact that the political system is corrupt as hell and that money rules, people have got to get off their butts and start running for office. Independent, Democrat, Republican, whatever. You know, for city council, run for county commission.
Start complaining about the ballot box. We've got to start complaining about we need to stop voting with machines.
But you know what? A candidate has a much broader forum for lodging that complaint about video game voting. And, you know, pay attention to framing. You don't call it electronic voting. You call it video game voting.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And the local level is where you fight all these things, like in your counties. Counties very often, in most states, do have a lot of say over how an election is run. And if you can get your county to clean up their election, you're part way there.
You're on the way. If you can get on,
if
you can get on your county executive committee.
Right, right.
You've got a voice in how the county's political party runs. And you know what? If you're elected onto that, they can't throw you off.
This is how the Republican Party got, this is what they started doing. They started a plan 20 years ago to take over this country by doing just that, and that's what they're doing. They started at the low, you know, state office levels, and they started putting their people in, and by golly, you know, it worked for them. It's working for them. Look what happened in Wisconsin.
I guess if there's any trick to it all, it lies in the fact that we have to do this on our own. But after we do it on our own, we have to start reaching out to others because, see, we don't have an Alec out there for us. We don't have this multi-billion-dollar infrastructure that the Republican Party has. The teabaggers were formed by as an astroturf group, you know.
And part of it is complacency. Progressives have a tendency to think that most people are honest, and that's not true. And they elect some people that they think will do a good job, and then they dust their hands off and say, well, I did that, and I'll see you in a couple years. They don't watch it. They don't pay attention, and people get corrupt.
Right, because they don't stay true to their...
Right, and there's nobody watching them, so, you know, do a little shoplifting there. And that's how we had so much trouble with the midterm elections. With progressives, we lost a whole bunch of seats because on the national level, because everybody said, well, we changed, we got rid of those damn Republicans, and now we're just all set, you know.
You're right, yeah.
and they just said, well, now I can go and do what I was doing. I was canoeing, I was at my job, and all of a sudden the job's gone. Why? What happened?
Where'd my job go? Hello? Anybody?
Hello, job. Boehner, where's my job? Yeah. Okay, well, Bob, I'll let you go so other people can call you, but it was really fun talking.
Oh, it was a wonderful conversation. I hope it will not be our last.
Oh, I hope not either. I'm glad I finally got your show, got the time squared away, and figured out where you were.
Thank you so much for making all those efforts, Susan.
Okay. We'll talk to you later, Bob.
Take care. Bye now. Oh, that was a good conversation. See, that's what conversation radio is all about. That's what it sounds like. And you'll notice at no point in time did we have to get out the fainting couch or the smelling salts or anything. She got through it just fine. It can be that way for you, too. The actual account of the story of Shoshana Hebshi's Day of Horror, what else do you call it? When the two people sitting next to her spent what is described as an extraordinarily long time in the bathroom. And you never know. You know, you're a passenger on one of these flights, you never know. But there were a pair of F-16s behind that jet, ready to blow every innocent soul in it right out of the sky. Because a man from India had the trots. At least that's what we call it here. Shoshana Hebshi wrote, "Before I knew it, about 10 cops, some in what looked like military fatigues, were running toward the plane carrying the biggest machine guns I have ever seen, bigger than what the guards carry at French train stations. My last tweet, majorly armed cops coming aboard. Someone shouted for us to place our hands on the seats in front of us, heads down. The cops ran down the aisle, stopped at my row, and yelled at the three of us to get up. Can I bring my phone? I asked, of course. What a cliffhanger for my Twitter followers. No, one of the cops said, grabbing my arm a little harder than I would have liked. He slapped metal cuffs on my wrists and pushed me off the plane. The three of us, two Indian men living in the Detroit metro area, and me, a half-Arab, half-Jewish housewife living in suburban Ohio, were being detained. She was strip-searched. She was strip-searched for nothing more, not even reading a scary book, for nothing more than sitting in her seat. Someone on the plane had reported that three of them in row 12 were conducting suspicious activity. No. Nothing was learned from September 11th, 2001, and that didn't make a single soul in this country or on this planet an iota safer because there was no danger. No danger. But this is our world. They put handcuffs on this woman. Metal handcuffs. They don't say whether it was in front or in back, but I'm guessing it was probably in back. And this happened because there are multi-million dollar industries in this country dedicated to fomenting terror in their own right. These hate-filled freaks who go on, Peter King, who go on and on about the Muslim threat, and that freak that Jude provided us audio for the other night, that rabbi in New York. They're terrorists because they are the ones who are spreading the terror that winds up with a housewife from suburban Ohio with a pair of handcuffs on her and a twitchy trigger finger away from being stitched in half. Jesus. Oh, and speaking of Jesus, those followers of Jesus, those really friendly, nice, wouldn't hurt a fly followers of Jesus. The location is Germantown, Maryland. I know this will have particular relevance for at least one listener to this program. The location is Germantown, Maryland. There's a doctor in Germantown, and he works in a women's reproductive health clinic. And because there are medical emergencies that require medical intervention in a pregnancy, late in that pregnancy, this physician does late-term abortions. Because there are medical conditions that will literally kill the mother if she tries to either vaginally or cesareanally have the baby. That physician does not own his building. The physician rents. The physician is Dr. Leroy Carhart. He's among the dwindling number of doctors in this country who will perform such abortions that in many instances save the life of the mother. Since December of last year, people who want to control the insides of women they don't even know have been picketing outside the office of Dr. Carhart. Apparently he came to Maryland from Nebraska when that benighted state ran him out. Well, the freaks who want to control the insides of women they don't even know have just ratcheted their protests up a notch. Dr. Carhart's life is in jeopardy, even in seemingly placid suburban Germantown, Maryland. But it has been ratcheted up a notch. Because these monsters, these busybodies, these goons, have decided it's not just enough to protest against Dr. Carhart. They want to make it impossible for his landlord to tolerate continuing to rent to Dr. Carhart. Listen to what these followers of Jesus have done. These people who are pro-life. They found out the name of the landlord. And they researched enough to find out about his family. And they set up a picket line and a protest outside the Robert Frost Middle School in Germantown, Maryland. They identified the landlord with banners that included his photograph, his full name, and his phone number. Over the words, "Please stop the child killing." And they protested outside the school where his daughter attends sixth grade. He has another child who is a high school freshman. What kind of god-awful conversation would that be to have with your children? Now, kids, Daddy's got some rental properties. You know that. You know where they are. And Daddy rents one building to a doctor. And there are some people who don't like what that doctor does because he helps women in trouble. Women who have medical problems. And they're saying that your daddy kills babies. Here's the quote from the Washington Post. Anti-abortion activists who have sought for months to shut down a Germantown clinic picketed its landlord outside a Montgomery County middle school where his daughter is a student, school and police officials said Monday. A small group of protesters stood outside Robert Frost Middle School in Rockville on Thursday, holding signs and a banner during back-to-school night, officials said. The student's father, who did not want to be named to protect the safety of his daughter, a sixth grader at the school, said he saw the five protesters when he went to the school event. On Monday, school security officials and local police worked together to try to keep protesters away from the students. They weren't quite successful because two of these weirdos, these abusive monsters, were holding, and you know how they are, they're always graphic, holding anti-abortion posters about an hour at the school's entrance so children had to walk by them. Now, this individual says, I very much respect the right of the protesters to protest in front of the clinic or the steps of Capitol Hill or the courthouse, but in front of a middle school is really not an appropriate place. Bless her heart, Leslie Maxwell is the spokeswoman for Montgomery County Schools, and she said, the idea that a group of protesters would target a school because of the child of someone because the child of someone they're targeting attends the school is fairly despicable. No, Leslie, it is despicable. It's entirely despicable. It's wholly despicable. We've got to work on your adjectives a little bit less. It's not fairly despicable. It is utterly despicable. Especially in light of the fact that these people are trying to protect the babies, except the ones that are living and going to the school. Fairly despicable. And yeah, the word, as much as I hate it, is appropriate. Targeting children, targeting these people. You know, it's kind of interesting. Jan in Vegas pointed this out in the chat room. At the Keystone XL pipeline protests ongoing that I mentioned in my conversation with Susan earlier, the rules say that as long as you keep moving, they won't touch you. But the minute that you stand still, the minute that you sit down, you're violating the law. And yet these two psychopathic, sociopathic monstrosities were standing in one place in front of the entrance to the school to torment the little children. Because, you know, I mean, come on, I'm a parent. A lot of you are, too. You know how kids are. I mean, Jesus, I remember when my children were called nigger lovers because we had a Barack Obama sign in the yard, and they were called that by their schoolmates on the bus. Why is your daddy killing... Wrong accent, probably. Why is your daddy killing babies? We didn't know your daddy killed babies. Tell him to stop killing the babies. Lesson from 9/11. Who are the terrorists? Who are the terrorists? Because this doesn't strike... A couple of guys from India going to the bathroom doesn't strike me as imminent terrorism. But just try to get any governmental entity to even remotely acknowledge that what these people, these so-called pro-life fiends are doing, try to get any law enforcement agency to acknowledge that that is what it is, that it is in fact terrorism, good luck. America post-September 11th, 2001, and the decade ensuing has a terrorism problem. And it is a form of terrorism perpetrated by white, mostly white, Christians. Maybe I'll get an email saying, Bob, you're being hard on the Christians again. You know what? The Christians have a Christian problem. I'm still waiting for the so-called normal church to step out and speak up against freaks like this in Rockville and Germantown, Maryland. Their silence is their acceptance. Plain and simple. It's not a complicated analysis. When the church is silent, the church is accepting. I've said it before, I'll say it again. The right wing in this country demands that everybody who has ever uttered the words, there is no God but God and Muhammad is his prophet, speak loudly and plainly and frequently to condemn those who do violence in the name of Allah. Sauce for the religious goose is sauce for the dogmatic gander, I say. Until Christianity is willing to shout it from their steeple tops and from behind the grotesques on their Gothic cathedral walls, that people who torment little children are not followers of Christ, then what? What are we to think? I know what I think, and I know what you probably think. But that's probably a little bit too strong of a too strong language. I know by now you've probably seen over at Crooks and Liars the video of Bill O'Reilly's latest conniption regarding Paul Krugman's post 9/11 column. He wrote, "What happened after 9/11, and I think even people on the right know this, whether they admit it or not, was deeply shameful. The atrocity should have been a unifying event, but instead it became a wedge issue. Fake heroes like Bernie Kerik, Rudy Giuliani, and yes, George W. Bush raced to cash in on the horror, and then the attack was used to justify an unrelated war the neocons wanted to fight for all the wrong reasons." As noted, Bill O'Reilly had an on-air conniption. He had a couple of his toy liberals on, demanding that they denounce Paul Krugman and denounce his word. Bless her heart, Leslie Marshall refused to do that. On the other hand, some pusillanimous little jackass from the Democratic Party of South Carolina went right along with Bill. But, you know, there's no news in that. There's no news in right-wing Republicans behaving like right-wing Republicans behave. Bill O'Reilly, Neil Cavuto, Limbaugh, Beck, Hannity, Savage. They do what they do, and it's no surprise. No bells, no whistles. But I got this late last night after the show from Sandra, and this is a surprise, because this is a publication, A, that is supposedly on our side of the debate, and B, that has been that has done great work in other areas. From the Political Mojo blog, at Mother Jones, of all places, Mother Jones, Rick Unger writing, Paul Krugman's inappropriate 9/11 post. Mother Jones? Mother Jones? Yeah, Mother Jones. Rick Unger says, on the 10th anniversary of the brutal 9/11 attacks on the United States, Paul Krugman, in a short but scathing New York Times blog post, elected to use the occasion to remind us of those who have used the event to begin unnecessary wars and further their political careers. Under the title, The Years of Shame, Krugman wrote, and that's the quote I just read you, Unger continues, I completely agree with the substance of what Krugman had to say in his post. I also completely deplore his choice of posting his piece on the 10-year anniversary of the attacks. He goes on and he says, it was decidedly not a day that needed to be about politics. God almighty, it made my skin crawl. Reading this garbage. On a day when Americans of all stripes should have been giving thanks to both President Bush and President Obama for doing whatever it is they do that has protected us from a tragic repeat of the events of September 11, 2001, even if you deeply object to things they have done in the days and years that followed, Krugman used the opportunity to commemorate what has gone wrong since 9/11. One might have hoped that Mr. Krugman would have displayed a deeper sensitivity and understanding of the meaning of yesterday's events, just as one would have hoped that Krugman might understand that while there is a time and a place for everything, September 11th, 2011 was not the right time from his piece. God Almighty. It seems to me that September 11th, 2001 was the right time for remembering that. Because September 11th, 2001 was what enabled the slaughter, the wholesale mass murder of a million Iraqi civilians. As far as I'm concerned, Paul Krugman wrote too little. The full force of moral fury should be loosed and should have been loosed that day on George W. Bush, Don Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Condi Rice, Colin Powell. These are not theories, my friends. These are facts. Paul Wolfowitz, Elliot Abrams, that whole blood-soaked crew, who should be behind bars now, who should have been compelled to stand in The Hague and defend themselves against charges of the war crimes that they committed, the crimes against humanity that they intentionally perpetrated. But precious Rick Unger At Mother Jones, of all places. In attacking Paul Krugman, by definition, by extension, leaps to the defense of George W. Bush. Now, I'm not going to pull a Rumsfeld. You know, he got all pissy, and I'm canceling me and my gnomes and my unknown gnomes and my garden gnomes and my yard gnomes. We're going to cancel our subscription to the New York Times. I'm not going to do that. For starters, I don't have a subscription to Mother Jones. I read it online. I guess I'm a sort of a lamprey that way. No, hell no, I'm broke. But I can say this with 100% certainty. Even though it's Rick Unger, I will never feel the same way about Mother Jones, what I once considered to be a wonderful publication. I will never again feel the same way about Mother Jones after having seen them put up and leave up that sleazy, slimy, smarmy attack, that too precious by half assault on Paul Krugman for doing nothing more than addressing facts. Not content to let his work stand on its own, Rick Unger runs and hides behind Nick Green from the Village Voice.
The opinions he quickly formulates may be very well valid ones, but everyone will be too baffled by his inappropriate brevity and callous timing to carefully weigh them. He knows this, as signaled by his refusal to allow comments, because Paul Krugman turned the comments off.
Because he knew that the little bat-wing, flapping, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking monkeys of the right would have a poo-flinging fine time.
You don't love America. Love it or leave it. Somebody get Toby Keith to put his boot up Paul Krugman's ass, would you?
Shameful. And we wonder, we dare wonder, why it is we on our side have a hard time getting anything done. Well, it's because if you march out there, sorry for the coming imagery, if you march out there in front and you're come on, y'all, hey, come on, let's go change things, let's fix this. Well, there's always going to be a Rick Unger behind you ready to put the shiv between your ribs. I guess I'm lucky that I'm as little known as I am. Because somewhere, something I have said this evening, or on any given other evening, would most assuredly have some well-meaning concern troll from our side of the debate wringing his or her hands and talking,
that's just too mean, that's too harsh. We don't have to be mean like they're mean. They make us cry when they're mean. And now he's making me cry.
Really, you know? So, I guess we're at the end of things for this evening. Sorry it was sort of halty and start and stoppy. I really had no control over it. It would have been kind of nice if the Appalachian Power folks would have knocked on the door and said, you know, power's going out. I guess it's too much to ask. Thank you, all of you, though, for meeting Tom's challenge. I appreciate it. We are not quite to where we need to be for mid-September, We need to be at, what, $1,250 for mid-September. We are still a couple of hundred bucks out from that. But it's a lot better where we are now than where we were at the start of the show. So thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you to everybody who helps make this program go and be what this program is. That's our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. That's our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. That's our blogger, Texas Betsy. Our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Go and read the entire Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy series. I think you will be as blown away as I am by the quality and style and content of Reverbo's writing. Thanks to my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee. Thank you for all you do, John Fox. He is a very busy man these days. And yet he still finds time to make things run smoothly on the website, among other things, and keeping me sane with the technology here. And thanks, of course, always go out to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, since the year 2002, almost 10 years now, almost a full decade, in which he has made sure that liberal progressive radio remains available on the internet. You get this horn stream because of Ben Birch's work at WhiteRoseSociety.org, and he always needs a little help himself, and he never sends a bill. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go there. Become a member. It is very inexpensive. And in so doing, you will become a part of the solution and a part of what we hope will someday be a blossoming, real future for people here in Appalachia that will spread out across this country and link up with other people oppressed by the coal industry all over the world. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Last night was a beautiful evening in wild, wonderful West by God, almost level West Virginia. Yeah, cancel that. Suddenly it feels like November. But you know what? That's okay. We'll get by because I checked out the, I looked out the Head On Radio Network color weather window. And you know what's not out on the road? Any Appalachian power trucks. So we should be safe. That's solid wood over there, too, that I was knocking on. I take my superstition seriously. I will not knock press board. Now, we should be okay tonight. Last night's show was a little weirded out. It came up about a half an hour short. And this evening, I'm told that the Democratic Party of Fayette County, wherein I reside, and of which I am ostensibly a member, is having a fish fry. I hate missing fish fries. But I guess they'll just have to labor on without me because, they'd be a little uncomfortable with me walking around over there with my Stop Mountaintop Removal t-shirt on and stuff. They get real, well, certain parts of this hidebound and otherwise moribund Democratic Party in this state get a little, you know, squirmy. When the hardcores show up. I'd rather be here anyway. Yeah, one of these days, you know, somebody's going to hit the lottery and we'll have, I don't know, I'm thinking St. Louis would be appropriate. You know, kind of middle of the country, maybe Kansas City. And we'll have we've already got the name for it, you know, one of these days. It'll be the Horn Inn. And we'll have our own little fish fry. How's that sound? I'd like that, would you? But not tonight. Not tonight. Because this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, a name given to these Thursdays by our good buddy Horst, who on YouTube is Horzac, H-O-R-Z-A-C, who dutifully produces clips of the program. He's a working stiff, and when he's got an opportunity, he produces clips of this program. You can subscribe to him at YouTube, Horzac, H-O-R-Z-A-C. And they're handy-dandy little clips that you can pass around to friends, neighbors, loved ones, wingnuts, teabaggers. Only if you want to watch their little heads explode, though, right? Just saying. But it's, oh, yes, Lottie, we could. We could go to Cape Cod and have a clam bake with lobsters. Oh, the food porn section of the Horn begins early this evening. Hi, I'm Bob. This is the Horn. This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. We like to call what we do here conversation radio, in case you've never heard of something like that before. At any rate, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and you know what? For once, we've got a thorn to put in their side, and it's downright refreshing. Last night, I told you the story coming out of Montgomery County, Maryland, about people who were all obsessed with controlling other women's insides, who had stooped to the level of tormenting school children. Really, you remember. And what they were trying to do was pressure a local landlord to make him stop renting space to a doctor who provides much-needed medical care to women in reproductive health crises. Well, the landlord is pushing back, and you can help. Really. Because, among other things, this filthy bunch of right-wing bigots that want to control other women's insides have taken to
emailing and phoning and writing this individual, we're praying for you that you'll do the right thing and stop renting space to that baby killer. Well, like I said, the gentleman is pushing back. He says he's received about 25 phone calls because they put his phone number out. He's received 4 letters in the mail and about 100 emails. He says, I have the names and contact information from each of the people reaching out to me.
Oh, yes. Lovely. Release the hounds.
No, stop that. No, he has the names and contact information from all of the people who are reaching out and praying for him. So he's going to embark on his own little campaign. He's going to call them back, ever so politely, and thank them for their prayers and their wishes. And by phone calls and emails and such, he hopes to let these right-wing freaks get a little sense of what it's like to have your electronic space, your life, invaded by people whom you have not invited to be a part of your life. Now, he is he's being really, really... And again, I want to reinforce this. He doesn't want anybody to be mean to these freaks. He doesn't want anybody to be nasty or use any bad language. Polite, polite, polite. Nicer to them than they are to us. But he said, this landlord, he said, I'd like to organize a campaign to call and email each of these concerned citizens back. It would be 100 times as thoughtful if each of the people who called or emailed me got 100 calls or emails from people who lovingly and in a Christian way said to them, the family truly appreciates your prayers. 2, your opinions and pleas have been heard, but 3, and the name of this organization is Defend Life. Oy. But 3, Defend Life has unfortunately misinformed you about the family's legal rights regarding their ability to evict or terminate the lease of the clinic. This fellow says, I will consider this phase 1. Once I get further information about the protesters that showed up at the school, I will ask for the same effort regarding their efforts. He says, I have set up an email solely for this effort. Please let me know if you are willing to help. You do not need to give me any more information than your email address if you do not want to. However, I will keep all information confidential. This was in a story over at Alternet by Sarah Seltzer. Sarah Seltzer. Anti-choice zealots go after clinic owners' children. Here's how he's fighting back. Well, from the nonviolence side of the street, here's how he is pushing back. We don't have to adopt their eliminationist rhetoric in order to resist their nastiness. So if you think that you could work with this gentleman, I don't know his name, then there's an email address set up and you can make contact. The email address is DL, stands for Defend Life, and DLterrorism@gmail.com. And DLterrorism@gmail.com. Again, polite, friendly, nice. Okay, not friendly. Polite, non-threatening, no dirty words. just make them deal with it. If you want to contact this individual and participate in the pushback, and DL Terrorism, just like it sounds, terrorism, T-E-R-R-O-R-I-S-M, and dlterrorism@gmail.com. Sarah Seltzer writing says, some would surely continue, talking about the hate-filled goons, some would surely continue, but others might be moved by a dose of sudden empathy for their opponents. End DL terrorism at gmail.com. Jim sends along his kind regrets this evening. He says, sorry to miss the show, but there's a Japanese monster movie done in Yiddish where Godzilla comes to Tokyo for Passover and Rodan gets bar mitzvahed. Well, you know, I'd probably do that too. Oh, the note coming in from Cassie. Please, can I be Princeton's honorary hillbilly? I need a title for the Green Club. You are. And you're not even just an honorary hillbilly. You are it's kind of like the fundamentalists say, we're not just Christians, we're Jews by adoption, and our adoptive father is a Jewish carpenter. Cassie, you are a hillbilly by adoption. Okie dokie. Indeed. So I thought we'd start out on a positive note. Now, bear in mind, this will all go quickly downhill. It always does, but we can have a giggle or two along the way. One of them being, from right here in wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia. You know, it's weird. It's weird to have a gubernatorial election in October, but we do. Because his overarching ambition caused Blanche Manchin to bolt for the Senate as quick as he was sure that Robert Byrd didn't have a pulse any longer. And that has wound up costing this state, this poor, poor state, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars in elections. It seems like every time you turn around, we've got another election. And so this time, we're having an election to see who's actually going to be governor. Really, really, and for true governor. Because until lately, we've had to call the guy who was the Senate Majority Leader, because we don't have a lieutenant governor in West Virginia, we have to call him Acting Governor Earl Ray Tomlin. Well, if he can just win this race in October, he'll get to be really and for true Governor Earl Ray Tomlin until November of next year. Ish. Now, Earl Ray is nothing to write home about. I am a registered Democrat in this state. I will damn sure not be voting for Earl Ray Tomlin. Earl Ray Tomlin is the guy who, when confronted with the scientifically researched, statistically valid, methodically investigated evidence that living near a mountaintop removal site causes people to die or their babies to be born deformed, his immediate off-the-cuff studied response was, well, every day somebody comes out in the news and says something makes you sick. Now, isn't that some bold leadership for the 21st century? Isn't it? Doesn't it just make you want to just run right out and vote for him if you're a Democrat? No, me either. So, fortunately, the Mountain Party has a candidate by the name of Bob Henry Baber. He's a good guy. He's an author. He's a really smart guy. Smart man. And I get to vote for him this year. Because I'm damn sure not voting for Bill Maloney. Bill Maloney. What? Huh? Bill Maloney. He's a right-wing teabagging goober from up Morgantown way. He's a creature of the Republican Party that's a wholly owned subsidiary of a small handful of really crazy right-wing people who claim to be West Virginians but live in Florida, like the recent goober, John Racy. And since it's really one of the only elections that the Republican Party has to focus on these days, they've really gotten behind Bill Maloney. I'm just grateful I don't have to meet him. Mr. Maloney, it's about Maloney. Sorry. No, there's all kinds of, you know, the Republican Governors Association's been dumping money into this. I don't know if you've gone to any liberal websites lately, but those ad bots that they have no control over have right-wing commercials all over the place, including, well, if you're here in West Virginia at least, because you know how cookies work, Bill Maloney ads and basically attacks on Earl Ray Tomlin, who, well, God knows he kind of earned them. But Bill Maloney, well, they've proven they're really, really serious about winning this election. Because why? Because they've hired a sure enough, no kidding, really, really serious campaign strategist. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They aim to win. That's why they brought Allison Myers on board here in West Virginia. You know, because West Virginians aren't capable of running their own campaigns. God forbid a Republican gubernatorial contender should actually hire a consultant inside from inside West Virginia. But then again, I guess we probably don't have any of those. Well, sure we do. Can't they dredge up somebody from the West Virginia Coal Association or the Fiends of Coal or the Feces of Coal? Or, I mean, that's what they're all about. But no, sorry. Christina Wilkie, writing over at Huffington Post, details the fact that Allison Myers has joined the campaign of West Virginia gubernatorial candidate Republican Bill Maloney. Damn! Come on, Bob, get it right. Bill Maloney. Nope! Anyway, that guy. Allison Myers. Now, yeah, you might remember Allison Myers as the former director of the Republican National Committee's Young Eagles program. Ah! It's the best I can do for an eagle on short notice. The Young Eagles. She's been on the staff since May, pulling down a nice $5,000 a month. In June and July, a little bit less in May because she didn't sign on, you know, on May 1st. She is a consultant. And, well, you probably said, wait, Allison Myers. Where do I remember that? Allison Myers. Yeah, you know. This is the woman who spent $2,000 at a lesbian bondage-themed club in L.A. It was known at the time as Bondage Gate. It was one of the things that sort of helped Michael Steele sort of on out the door as head of the RNC. Yeah, that was part of the Young Eagles initiative. They were trying to go and find themselves some young members of the GOP. Now, of course, young and GOP, that probably means like, what, 61? No, I'm being mean. But a big part, after the Young Eagles thingamajig out on the left coast broke out, they had an after party. And, you know, if you're an upstanding family values repiglickin', where in the world would you want to have an after party besides a lesbian-themed bondage club? I mean, that just has family values written all over it, doesn't it? So she ran up $2,000 worth of bills at this club in L.A. Oh, what was the name of the club? Trying to find out here. Well, it just keeps saying, everything says, there it is. Voyeur West Hollywood, a bondage-themed nightclub featuring topless women dancers imitating lesbian sex. That just says Republican family values to me. So Allison Myers submitted a reimbursement form for the $2,000 that she put on the credit card. But the Repiglickin National Committee said, wait a minute. What? You want us to reimburse you for having a party at a lesbian bondage-themed club in West Hollywood? Well, if you wanted us to do that, you damn well should have invited us, honey. But you didn't, so we ain't reimbursing you. The story by Christina Wilkie says, insiders said, according to an internal memo, Myers was fired for submitting a reimbursement form for an activity that was not eligible for reimbursement. But insiders said there was more to it than that. Her dismissal and the subsequent dismantling of the Young Eagles program. Ah, they dismantled it? Damn. Helped to quell some of Steele's most vocal critics at the time, and there were plenty of them, including Sarah Palin and Karl Rove. But, you know what? She lands on her feet, Allison Myers. Leaving the Repiglickin National Committee, she founded a consulting firm called Altered States, LLC. And it is to Altered States, LLC that the Bill Maloney campaign has been writing checks. So, being a journalist, Christina Wilkie contacted Michelle Yee, of the who is a spokeswoman for Bill Maloney. And Allison Yee said, Michelle Yee said,
Allison is a valued and respected staffer who has been critical to assisting our effort to move West Virginia forward from the failed leadership of a 36-year career politician.
She's talking about Earl Ray Tomlin. Yeah, I'll bet she's moving it forward. We're not particularly proud of it, and we don't make a lot of noise about it, but West Virginia is one of those states where the strippers in the strip clubs take it all off. Mm-hmm. Everything. What do you think? You reckon they're willing to, and one of them is in a failed township to the west of Charleston called Jefferson. How do I know? It's been in the news. What do you want to bet they are not letting
Allison Myers anywhere near Jefferson Township, West Virginia. Of course, then again, I don't think it would cost $2,000. Yeah, a couple, I don't know, you can probably just drag, well, I'm not going to, no, that's just tawdry and trashy, and I'm not going to do it. So, well, I'm still waiting to see. I tweeted it last night, and nothing showing up yet. But, you know, we here in West Virginia, we got us a whole bunch of them family values Republicans. Go to church every time the doors open types of Republicans. Then I'll just be curious to see how that plays out. Now, one of my Twitter followers said, when I said, you know, how's this going to play with the family values type, said, well, it won't. They'll sweep it into the closet with the gay right to life death penalty Christian haters. David Vitter will hold the door. Man, that's a mouthful. They'll sweep it in the closet with the gay right to life death penalty Christian haters. And David Vitter will hold the door. Hear, hear. Oh, by the way, email coming in from our buddy Tom, who sponsored the matching challenge last night. I think it should be, I think he called it the Mark in Japan matching challenge. He said, well, that was quick. Fun, too. My part will be on the way tomorrow. Boogity, boogity, boogity. Isn't that just catching on, the boogity, boogity, boogity? Amen. Got to say amen after the boogity, boogity, boogity. I had a lot more luck with that than Bill Maloney. Boogity, boogity, boogity. Amen. Tom says, regarding frothy mixtures, lies about Social Security, he forgot to mention that under Reagan, to ensure the solvency of Social Security for the boomer generation, the payroll tax was doubled, the largest tax increase in the history of the country. I don't remember what year it was, mid-80s, but I clearly remember being stunned at tax time after all the palaver about the great Reagan tax cuts that our taxes went up and take-home pay went down considerably. Tom says, I'm a few years older than you, 55 this year, and it sounds like I may be among the first to get my money stolen from me. And that's what they did. That's the reality. Then Tom's right, you know, I'll get my mind stolen a little bit later. I can't wait to be standing there on my walker at Walmart at the tender age of 87. Welcome to Walmart. This is what freedom looks like. I've got a younger worker who helps me over the side of the dumpster every night, and we go looking for the stuff they threw away out of the deli that the dogs didn't want. Jesus. So that's a starting place, and we've got some other fun stuff. We've got sort of a catch-up story from Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Kooky old Pat Robertson's back in the news. Lovely, ain't it? It is Thursday, and I got to check here. Green News Report for the evening. Because that should be on the way. Oh, Brad. I look forward to the Green News Report every day. But that'll be coming your way this evening, I hope. Of course, last night being a bit of a weird, sort of truncated, interrupted by clean coal electricity, lie, powered down outage sort of thing, it took a bite out of the sort of normal rhythm of the call-in structure of the program. So hopefully you'll take advantage this evening of your opportunity to participate, and in fact, if you wish, lead the conversation. That's one of the things that sets the Horn apart from other formats. You don't have to be talking about what I'm talking about in order to... No. It's a collaborative, cooperative effort. And I get just as much out of your calls as you do out of anything that I say.
So by all means, if something is, if there's a bee under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle, don't leave it there. It can cause swelling and necessitate a doctor visit if it lasts for more than 4 hours. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. It is listener-supported, everything we do here at the Horn, and we are about $200 away, and this is the halfway point of September. We're about $200, counting Tom's challenge being met last night. We're about $200 away from making the halfway mark and being downhill to a happy end of September. That's about 20 members of the Thrifty 250, and the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So is the snail mail address. Any way you choose to go is fine by us. We'll be back after a little break, hopefully with your calls. This is for you, Mill Baloney. Dadgummit. Come on!
Means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, September 15, 2011.
It's here that companies like Solyndra are leading the way toward a brighter and more prosperous future.
Or not.
Was Solyndra just one bad bet by an administration rushing to claim credit for the first loan guarantee? Or is it the tip of the iceberg?
This isn't picking winners and losers. It's helping ensure that we have winners here at all.
Congressional Republicans pounce on U.S. solar companies' bankruptcy. Shocking revelation, BP is to blame for BP's oil spill. Plus,
for the next 24 hours, the world is joining hands for 24 hours of reality.
Reality? Well, that'll be a nice change of pace, Al Gore.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
You let the government mandate a vaccine that helps prevent one form of cervical cancer, and you might as well let the UN's jackbooted thugs hold down your little princess and inject her with pharmaceutical grade slut juice.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, all of a sudden Republicans found it within themselves to actually do some oversight in Congress and actually be concerned about some small amount of government waste.
Yeah, congressional Republicans have really pounced on the bankruptcy announcement of U.S.-based solar company Solyndra, to which the Obama administration had granted $500 million in federal loan guarantees to build a factory in the U.S. But 2 weeks ago, Solyndra declared bankruptcy, blaming competition from China, and is now under investigation by the FBI. At a contentious House hearing on Wednesday to investigate the administration's handling of the loan, Republicans portrayed it as rushed to benefit an Obama campaign donor, and more broadly, as a failure of the administration's push for clean energy.
We ask who made decisions, we ask who was responsible, and the two of you stand here and point to other people and take no accountability to the taxpayers in America and in Kansas for having lost $500 million of their dollars.
That was Republican Representative Mike Pompeo. Jonathan Silver of the Department of Energy Loan Program defended the department's actions, saying it did due diligence and that such programs are necessary to keep the U.S. from slipping further behind China in the global clean energy race.
This isn't picking winners and losers. It's helping ensure that we have winners here at all. We invented this technology, and we should produce it here. The question is whether we are willing to take on this challenge or whether we will simply cede leadership in this vital sector to other nations and watch as tens of thousands of jobs are created overseas.
So is the administration here making excuses for having given these loan guarantees to this company that ended up failing?
Well, there are a couple of factors at work here. House Democrats responded by saying that Republican investors to Solyndra benefited as well, like the Walton family, who owns Walmart. And they also pointed to federal loan guarantees, for example, to the nuclear industry, which dwarf any guarantees given to the clean energy industry.
So when the Republicans are asking, was this done because there was a Democratic donor behind Solyndra, they're ignoring the fact that the Republican donors from Sam Walton's Walmart were also behind Solyndra?
And other Republican investors as well. But the major part of the story that was not covered really in the hearing was the massive solar subsidies that the Chinese government gives to its solar industry. For example, U.S. taxpayers grant the oil industry $4 billion in tax subsidies every year. That $4 billion is the minimum that the Chinese government gives to each Chinese solar company, allowing them to kill global competition by dumping below-cost solar panels on the global market.
The Republicans and many of the Democrats, you know, shout free trade, we can't put restrictions. But it means that U.S. companies can't compete.
And, of course, all of this helps the Republicans' donors in the oil industry. Speaking of oil company subsidies, remember the BP oil spill?
They gave up on getting the oil out of the water a long time ago.
Now the challenge is to get the water and all the dead shrimp and stuff out of the oil.
BP was behind schedule and over budget and took too many shortcuts. That's the conclusion of a new comprehensive report released on Wednesday on the causes of the BP oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico last year. A joint task force of the U.S. Coast Guard and the new Bureau of Ocean Energy Management found that a botched pipeline cementing job was the central cause of the explosion aboard the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig. But the federal investigators said that ultimately it was shortcuts taken to save money by BP and its contractors, Transocean and Halliburton, that created a cascade of human and mechanical failures that led to the worst oil spill in the nation's history. Finally,
muchas gracias a todos. Bienvenidos
a la climatereality.org.
Our next presentation is from the remote town of Kotzebue, Alaska.
It's 24 hours of climate reality around the world, a project of former Vice President Al Gore. 24 hours of climate reality is literally a 24-hour online broadcast to bring the facts about the reality of climate change to the public in every country and every time zone. From French Polynesia to Istanbul to Boulder, Colorado, using local presenters in each time zone, the 24-hour marathon concludes Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time in New York. It's really quite fascinating. You can catch all of the broadcasts at climaterealityproject.org.
Amazing. They have to make a special event out of reality. For more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report stay on the air, because we bring you reality every day of the week. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your reality-based Green News Report.
No escape from reality. Open your eyes. Look up to the skies and see.
Heading down to Joplin on Highway 44. By the time I hit Tulsa, I couldn't take it anymore. I stopped into this roadhouse, I think it was called Pearl's. It had a flashing sign saying, girls, girls, girls. Now I walked into the front door, the sign it didn't lie. There she was upon the stage, couldn't believe my eyes. I asked this fellow what's her name, and he said he didn't know.
Yeah, her name was, well, okay, no, it wasn't Allison Mine. No, no, Fifi Bardot. That, of course, the great Kent Duchesne. Welcome back to The Horn. It's about, 17 minutes before the hour. And a little email rolled in just now from Jan in the U.K., subject line, Sarah Palin. I see Sarah's in the poo, according to a book soon to be published. It was on one of the news programs here over here in the UK. Taking cocaine, smoking weed, and having an affair with her husband's partner. Regards, Jan. Oh, it's much better than that. This thing is going to, I mean, it's going to read like, it would make Kitty Kelly blush. And Kitty Kelly is actually pretty accurate, but of course, the big thing, or, you know, the thing that'll matter the most to the teabaggers, you know, because you know how teabaggers are about, you know, those ones. Yeah, a little one-night stand action between Miss Sarah back before she married Todd and a certain Michigan, University of Michigan basketball player by the name of Glenn Rice. Hint, his last name may be Rice, but... Well, again, but this also, and also coming from the book, of course, the fact that as soon as she became governor, she fired all of her person, all of the people of color who worked anywhere around her. Just didn't want to be reminded of that one night of torrid passion, I suppose, but, well, who are we, right? Yeah, who are we? By the way, if you were listening to the Green News Report, and I know you were, you might have heard reference in the Solyndra story to a Kansas Republican by the name of Mike Pompeo, or Pompeo. Now, this guy is the number one bagman for the Koch brothers in the United States House of Representatives. And, of course, he was having a hissy about the taxpayer monies that went to Solyndra to... Right, yeah. Natural, isn't it, that a guy who does for the Koch brothers what Monica did for Bill would be having a hissy about solar panels, isn't it? This is also just tying up loose ends. This is also the same freak I was talking about the other night, who, it turns out, is sponsoring a bill to make sure that the Environmental Protection Agency cannot give a $6,000 internship to a graduate student in environmental justice. See how it all sort of just comes together? Yeah. So we're going to start the conversation portion of the program on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4. Head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, how you doing?
Hey, good, Andy. What's up?
Yeah, you got Andy again. Yeah, that Solyndra thing. You know, another thing they failed to mention is the private equity investors had $1 billion in that, too. You know, the government might have put in $535 million, but there's already another billion in there.
And, I mean, does it seem, you know, you're kind of a money guy. Does it seem rational to you to buy into the notion that maybe they were sort of squeezed out of the market by unfair competitive practices from China?
Oh, there is no question that's what happened. And that is the fault of our government not protecting its industries. I mean, I've heard that there's been about $10 billion invested by the Chinese in this particular sector, and they took out two other companies across the country, one in New York State, I think it was named SpectraWatt, and another one in Massachusetts.
Yeah, in fact, I think you and I talked about
the same month.
Yeah, you and I talked about Evergreen at one point in time, didn't we?
Yes, I brought that up a while ago because they were moving their manufacturing to China after they had gotten subsidies from the U.S. government to manufacture here, and they'd already built a plant. I mean, the U.S. government just doesn't, and the Republicans, of course, don't get this at all. I mean, this is the future. You got to protect your industry. This is what and the Chinese are just massively putting money. I saw an L.A. Times article, too, that said the company, the Solyndra, was manufacturing their product for $6, trying to sell it at $3, and the Chinese were selling it at $1.50. So, of course, I mean, your cost of manufacture were three times more than what the Chinese were selling it for.
Well, is it me? Is it just me, or is that, well, I mean, Brad and Desi mentioned it. That's the miracle of free trade, or the ignominious nature of free trade?
Yeah, that's globalization and foreign competition on steroids by a socialist, communist country that's in bed with its industry. I mean, they couldn't do that unless they were massively subsidized to be able to gear up the engineering effort, too, way beyond what we could do here. And like I said, too, the Republicans are trying to go after Obama over this, especially that guy Upton, I think, is the head of the Energy Commission. Matter of fact, I just saw an article today about that. And how can they get on the government for putting money into it, like I said, when already private equity venture capitalists had already put in over $1 billion into Solyndra? So somebody thought that the company had a lot of promise. So I don't understand. I don't think the Republicans have a leg to stand on.
Except for the leg that is propped up and manufactured by the for-profit media, Andy.
Yeah, when you don't
because everything that you and I have just discussed is entirely too detailed and too nuanced for the average viewer of, you know, Radio Rwanda.
Absolutely. Yeah, they won't tell you about all the money the Chinese government has put into their solar industry to drive down the prices. I mean, it's something like 5 or 10 to 1 the investment that they've made, and very low cost. interest to these companies. So the competition is so unfair. The only way you can grow your industry here and to make that viable, SpectraWatt and Evergreen and Solyndra, would have been to have tariffs or some kind of, or to say that the U.S. is going to do a massive energy program and only buy from U.S.-based manufacturers. That's it. So these guys can make it, and we can actually have jobs here.
And then the Chinese would, of course, have a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy.
Tell them to go F themselves. Quite frankly, I would be more than happy to do that. F themselves. I mean, come on. We can't afford that Solyndra. They lost 1,100 jobs. We can't afford to lose 1,100 jobs with 12% unemployment in Northern California. I mean, we can't afford that. That's absurd.
I agree, and that's another one of those things about this administration that, you know, the Republicans are the ones who are having the fit, and of course, there's improper pressure. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see be surprised at all, Andy, to pretty soon see Solyndra have the hyphenated word gate appended to the back of it.
Oh, and to find out that
Daryl Issa was going to issue subpoenas.
And that's the man I really wanted to talk about, but go ahead.
Well, no, and just, and to, because this is the way they operate. We, as noted in your email last night, or maybe the night before, I think, you're harder on Obama than I am. But by the same token, if we don't like what's going on now I hate that word gridlock, but basically total entropy of government, I think, is an appropriate phrase. Imagine what it would be if he's dealing with impeachment hearings during all of 2012. And would you put that past the Republican House? Because I wouldn't, Andy.
Well, I want to talk about Daryl Issa, and I'm surprised how docile Mr. Issa has been as far as, because I thought for sure he would go after this administration, you know, with a fervor that we haven't seen since Clinton was knocked up around the head by the whole, what was that called, the Whitewater? Imbroglio that he got himself in, and the all the investigations that were done by, what was that, Olson?
Star
investigation. But I would have thought Daryl Issa would have done that full blast, and actually he's been pretty docile.
I think that's because the snakes and scorpions know when to strike.
Yeah.
And to have done something really overt in the first couple of years of Obama's presidency, when he had the American people on his side, big mistake. And maybe they'll understand from 1996 that this would be a mistake, but I expect to hear a lot more out of Mr. Issa in the next 12 months.
Well, one thing, I'll give you my theory on this real quick, but one thing, too, I noticed today is another California company, solar company, also is on its way, going called Cala Solar, laid off 80 people. Just the other day, they said on Wednesday they laid off 80 people. It was in the article that I read about Solyndra. But Cal Solar is another company that had been doing fairly well, and they're having financial problems too. You know, it's just like I said, we need a whole industry program by the government to foster these industries and make them work.
Well, they need to be incubated, and the first, you know,
absolutely
the first thing with incubation is protection. You know, any parent will even put itself at hazard to protect its young.
Right. We have to have a future.
And that's what the Chinese are doing.
In jobs, absolutely they are. And they're, when you cut prices, and I know Rick Smith has brought this up too. When you cut prices across the board in an industry sector, and so it's not just an idiosyncratic a single company that's screwed up financially or the management of that company. It's industry wide when you knock off, when there's three other companies, four companies across, what I just named the other one, Cala Solar, is getting hit. So there's four companies across that industry that are getting wiped out. So it's not an idiosyncratic problem of just that single company. This is industry-wide. They're just blowing out the whole solar panel industry here. Gone. You got to protect it. Like you just said, you got to protect. You know, Daryl Issa, there's another thing. There was an article on 819 by Floyd Norris. I brought up his name before, an author. He did an article called A Regulator, A Lawmaker, A Quandary. And in that article, it talks about DEI Holdings, which is a Daryl Issa company.
Right.
He's on the board when they went public. And before that, I think he was actually CEO, but because he became congressman, he kind of stopped being active and just was on the board. But that company went public at 16. It's an electronics company. I believe it's the one that actually, DEI Holdings is the one that actually does the monitoring devices that are on the automobiles, because that's his big claim to fame where he made most of his money. But anyway, it went public at 12, 2005, at $16 a share, and Goldman Sachs actually was a lead underwriter. For Goldman Sachs to underwrite something, it's usually a big deal. And in the syndicate was J.P. Morgan, International Bank of Canada, CIBC, and also Citigroup and Wachovia. So it was a big deal, right? This Daryl Issa company raised $150 million, and Daryl Issa's foundation took $3.8 million right away off the top. By late 2007, the stock had gone from $16 to $2, and there were no longer any analysts following the company. In early 2009, the company was delisted from the NASDAQ and then traded on the pink sheets. It went as low as 10 cents a share. So it was running into financial problems. It got hammered.
But he got his on the front end, right?
Excuse me?
But he got his on the front end.
Right. They got their $3.8 million, the ISA Foundation, right off the top, right? So then they did a reverse 240-for-1 split to get rid of all the small shareholders, and then they reversed the split again to bring it back. So they cashed out anybody who had under 240 shares, and those shareholders got 82 cents on the dollar for their investment, original $16 investment. So if they had that original $16 investment, they lost 95% of their money. Then at the same time, 6 months later, which is around June of 2011 of this year, the company was sold at $4.46 a share. So the original ventures that he cashed out lost, like $3.80 or something like that per share that they could have had if they just held on to it for six more months instead of being cashed out. And the original shareholders in the public market who bought at 16 lost 72% of their value instead of 95%. But anyway, this whole deal, and he was on the board still while this is all going on. So the managers and everybody who are insiders got to, reap some money from a stock that had gone down to 10 cents a share from a five-year period. And he had gotten the best, investment bankers in the country to prop this thing up at the original $16 IPO, where, of course, his foundation got their $3.8 million. And then the thing just tanked. And what did all...
Well, was it ever any... I mean, honest to God, Andy, was it ever anything to begin with? Or was it since the phrase is so in vogue these days, was it just a shinied-up Ponzi scheme to design...
Well, he brings this up, too. There was another article that came out. It was actually a front-page New York Times article on August 15th, helping his district and himself. By a guy named Eric Lichtbau of the New York Times wrote this, but it talks about how this company, one of its customers was Toyota. And if you remember, Toyota had this gig going where they had the brake problem.
Oh, yeah.
And Issa was responsible on that committee for looking into that as well. And there was a whole conflict of interest.
Yeah, because his whole gizmo was tied to Toyota, wasn't it?
Yes. And this company was the one that had the tie-ins with Toyota. So there's all kind of conflicts of interest.
But, conflicts of interest, Andy, don't matter when it's Republicans. It's another case of that, and I know it's sickening to say and sickening to hear, but, dadgummit, this is the reality we live with, IOKIYAR.
Right.
Classic case being, you know, Willard Romney. Now, here's a guy who's running around the country